Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Third and final hour now upon us. Glad you're with us for it. It's been a bumpy ride tonight. Been a good ride, though. James Edwards, Eddie the Bombardier Miller in studio with me for tonight's final hour, and you're listening to the Political Cesspool Radio program as we broadcast to you tonight, Saturday, August 27th. Oh my goodness, next week it'll be September. The fall won't come soon enough on this hot summer. Saturday, August 27th, AM 1380, WLRM Radio, WLRM Studios. That's where we are tonight in the nice, comfortable air conditioning. Now, I can't say the same for our friends down on the street tonight. But we're here. This is our flagship station, but by no means our only affiliate, as we are going out to the AM-FM affiliates of the Liberty News Radio Network. We're talking about all the news that would be hushed up or otherwise distorted by our contemporaries in the mainstream media tonight. And, of course, I should mention, if you're listening to us on the Internet, we are simulcasting around the world tonight. You don't have to live in a city that carries us on the AM-FM dial. No matter where you are, if you have an Internet connection and a couple of speakers, you can listen to us online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Of course, Saturday night, 6 to 9, we'll be streaming live there on the Internet simulcast. But if you can't catch our live show, you can always catch us in the broadcast archives. All of that available to you on demand at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Last week, Eddie and I talked about this briefly on the show, I think, and then I posted it on the website last Sunday, and it just became a big, big hit. Two souls, one cart. And we're looking here at a couple of 300-pounders, and they're getting married at Walmart. It's a white guy and a black woman. And it's so appropriate that they get married at Walmart because this is something that I've noticed. I'm sure other people had to have noticed it, and I found out that that had been true because when I watched, when I read some of the replies to this, so many people shared my observations that I had concluded. Two Souls, One Cart. It's about this mixed race couple who won a sweepstakes to be married at Walmart, have their wedding at Walmart. You got to watch the video. Yes, I have a video about this. Two Souls, One Cart, August 21st at the blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And these just look like two people you would find shopping at Walmart. I tell you, America has fallen far in so many ways. But now, I tell you, when I think about Americans, I don't think about the lean, strong-willed, rationally minded people that came before us. When I think of Americans now across the board, but especially at Walmart where it seems to epitomize this, I think of fat, ugly, stupid people, and I hate to say that. When I think of Americans, you know, just an average American, no one in particular, when I envision a stereotypical American, I think of fat, sluggish, sloppy, stupid. And that's all by design, and that's what most Americans are devolving into now, Eddie.
No doubt about it, James. Like I was telling you earlier, James, I'm really disappointed in the woman. I thought that she would probably have her, you know, standards higher in a man than to marry, you know, a slug like that man, right, that race-mixing man. But yeah, you know, if you look at the schools, starting with the school system, you know, our schools don't get any, they don't get exercise anymore. You know, the people have been so dumbed down. You know, they know more about Martin Luther King than they do George Washington. They're just, the curriculum is just, it's just pitiful. Several years ago, there was a valedictorian that graduated out here from, I think it was Fraser High School here in Memphis. And, you know, she had trouble reading her diploma. And that's a true story. And we have it's either Tresvant or Fraser High School here in Memphis, James, when they had, what was it? You might remember this story. What, they have like something like 90% of the senior class was pregnant when they graduated out here? You remember that?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was somewhere between 80 and 90%. And James, they even have... sometimes I feel like I'm just really not, you know, experiencing reality. I feel like I'm living, walking through life in a dream, you know, psychotic or something, you know, never waking up. Because when I was in school, never in my wildest dreams would you imagine that a pregnant girl would come to school. And now, James, by God, they have nurseries in every school in Memphis.
I'm glad you brought that up because you're a little longer in the tooth than I am. I'm 31 years old, and all my time in school, and of course, I homeschooled 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. But my mom worked at the Christian school that I went to through 8th grade, and my dad was a coach there. And so, yeah, we went 43-0 in 8th grade, you know, and, only undefeated team in the history of the school there, basketball. But, you know, we kept tabs with what was going on in grades above and beyond my own because, you know, my family was a big part of the school there. In all my years of going to that school, only one time and one time only did, you know, Briarcrest is a big school here, thousands of kids go there. Only once did a girl end up pregnant while at Briarcrest while I was there. In my 8 years there, only once was there a pregnancy, and she was kicked out of school. And now, as you said, now that was just me talking. You know, I was going to school in the 80s and early 90s. I graduated high school in 1998. Only once. And now, as you said, all of the schools have nurseries, and it's almost cool to be pregnant. Well, anyway, getting back to the Walmart thing, I mean, we're just giving that as an example of how standards, morals, and otherwise have fallen in America so drastically. I go to Walmart from time to time. I'll admit it. You know, we all do. Occasionally, we have to go there for something. It's convenient. You know, the prices are cheap. I'm like, you know, when you look at those gossip magazines, celebrities, they do things just like you do. Well, yes, I go to Walmart occasionally. And every time I go there, oh, I dread it. I'd rather take a beating than go in there. It's depressing. It's like all those fluorescent lights. And it's the dregs of society in Walmart. It is a third world hell to go into Walmart. It's really a crystal ball into the future of America. Anytime you go into America, into Walmart, it's looking to the future of America. Sloppy, ill-mannered people, heathen kids, running amok, trashy people, trashy store. You know, they've got 30 cashiers stations and only 3 of them are manned. It's just nasty. Well, we've got a video for you. ThePoliticalCesspool.org. Check it out. You know, Eddie, I know you were listening to the show before you showed up in the studio tonight. We were talking about that MLK shakedown they're having there at the National Mall. It pales in comparison to the United States Slavery Museum. If you've never heard of the United States Slavery Museum, it's because it never got off the ground, but it's not because they didn't take in a lot of money. They took in millions, and it was all siphoned off and extorted by the former black governor, if you can call him black, of Virginia, L. Douglas Wilder. We're going to talk more about this next week. But what's that? It probably was a presidential candidate. But as the old saying goes, no sooner do you put one person in a position of responsibility than they immediately start stealing. Well, that's the story behind the United States Slavery Museum. We'll come back and tell you something quick about that. Little teaser for next week, and then we'll let Eddie go chase Brer Rabbit. Yeah, Eddie's gonna ask you a question. We gotta take a break though.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Follow up, United States National Slavery Museum. It's been 10 years. The big story in the New York Times this week about this little extortion racket. Been 10 years since L. Douglas Wilder, the nation's first elected black governor, unveiled a plan to build the United States National Slavery Museum on 38 acres in Fredericksburg, Virginia. It was to be the only institution of its kind, housed in a soaring glass building and illuminated at night so that cars passing on I-95 could see the full-scale replica of a slave ship in its atrium. Today, the land remains vacant and is drowning in tax bills. The museum owes more than $215,000 in property taxes dating back to 2008. This month, the city announced that it's putting the land on the auction block. It seems that nothing has been happening, and nobody's answering any of the mail we send to them. So we're just doing the same thing that we do to anybody else, said the city treasurer there in Fredericksburg. The museum's director has departed. Its board no longer meets. Its offices are abandoned, and the museum's state license to solicit donations has lapsed. Some people who donated artifacts to the museum years ago have demanded them back. So here's a recap, Eddie.
Yeah, good luck.
The museum's design called for a nearly 300,000 square foot building. Mr. Wilder, again, the black former governor of Virginia, estimated that the construction cost was $100 million, but in its last filing from 2007, the museum reported just $115,000 in assets aside from the land. Okay, so you got this former black governor of Virginia going to build the National Slavery Museum, because there's one thing we need more of. It's reminders about slavery, because we don't have enough of that. They raised $100 million and never built anything. Never built anything. Never poured a foundation. All that's there is a garden that marked the spot where the museum is going to be built. They raised $100 million, never built the museum, collected all of these artifacts that they must have hawked off from donors. $100 million plus artifacts. They never pay the property taxes, and now it's being auctioned off. That is a racket that MLK himself could be proud of.
You know what? James, I bet you a dollar to a donut that the garden there, some white schmuck put the garden in, did the work, because the blacks aren't going to go out there, like Keith Alexander says, they're not going to break a sweat in that age because they get all these government handouts. But that tickles the crap out of me. Maybe it's mean-spirited of me being a Christian and all, but that just, you know what, I think it's poetic justice, James, because, you know, a black's not going to spend a cent on anything like that. They're not going to, like Keith says, always find a saying, he's right there. You know, even the well-to-do blacks, they're not going to spend a dollar on their kids' education. They're not going to spend a dollar or anything like this. These white liberal schmucks are the ones that sent in all this money. And you know, James, I'm glad they got fleeced. I really am. I think it's poetic justice. And I'll bet you that a white man did it. Listen, folks, I got to bring up something. I'm going to start back in the old days, back in the 80s. I'm going to bring us up to date on what's going on down here at the border with this Fast and Furious. A lot of you people may not remember the crime that was going on over in Mena, Arkansas back in the 80s and the early 90s when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas. But there was a big, huge series done by the Commercial Appeal, no doubt, here in Memphis about what was going on over there in Arkansas, and they hooked it up with the deal with Whitewater, political shenanigans over there in Little Rock, Arkansas, involving the Rose Law Firm in Hillary and Bill. Well, come to find out, they were smuggling millions and millions of dollars worth of drugs in from Colombia, South America, all over South America. And they were taking the drugs and they were dumping them on the streets of Los Angeles, California, and Miami. And our government, the United States government, under the CIA, they were selling the drugs to the Bloods and the Crips in Los Angeles. There was a huge explosion of crack cocaine, because the drug lords out there in L.A. were taking that cocaine, and to make it go further, they were cooking off crack and selling it to other lesser drug dealers. Well, the same thing was going in Miami. There was a fellow by the name of Gary Webb. Some of you more, older guys and astute readers of keeping up with the news. A fellow named Gary Webb out of the San Diego Mercury did a huge article on it. Bless his heart. He took about a year or two to do this tedious research project, and he released a whole series of these articles over a period of time called, I think he named this whole series, The Dark Alliance. The series were in the archives. You could go into the San Diego Mercury newspaper and pull them up. You can no longer pull them up from the San Diego Mercury, but you can go into there's other newspapers have gotten them. But see, he detailed it. I mean, it's documented. I mean, it's this irrefutable evidence that the CIA and other government, United States government agencies, were dealing these drugs. They were dealing trafficking in human slaves. And when I'm talking about arms, I'm talking about grenade launchers, Uzis, M79 machine guns. I mean, these kind of weapons were showing up, you know, in the streets of LA, streets of Miami. And well, it's still going on, people, and it's going on. It was going on during Vietnam too, because the CIA was sending drugs back in the coffins, James, for God's sakes, in the coffin of my dead brothers and the GIs. They would put these drugs in and they send them into the United States. They had planes crash up here, in the United States. Of course, the police could never do anything about it. But now we've heard about this Fast and Furious down here on the Mexican border, where we have the ATFE, they've added the E for explosive, the DEA, the IRS agents, you know, all these government thugs are getting in on the action, and they were busted red-handed of selling these drugs to the drug dealers down here in Mexico. And the reason, and when they got busted, they had this little flimsy excuse that said we were taking these guns down there, we were giving them to the drug lords, because we wanted to trace the drugs from the penny ante drug lords to the big time guys.
Yeah, I want to chime in on that real quick, Ed, and I'll turn it back over to you. Yeah, he's right about this. Obama even, I think, had to comment on this, because he was saying that, yeah, we gave them all these guns because we wanted to track the flow of the guns. Yeah, so basically, this was a big story. We actually posted this on the Cesspool site, and it had a lot of references and links to major news stories. Major news stories, you know, covered this. The United States government, yes, released thousands of guns to the drug cartels so they could track the flow of the guns. This is absolutely true story, at least that much of it is.
Of course, the government had no idea where the guns were going, even though they hand-carried them and hand-turned them over to the drug lords in Mexico. And meanwhile, police, civilians in Southwest police from the southwestern states of Arizona and Texas and California being slaughtered by these illegal guns. But, you know, we had a fellow on the radio, and I know I've mentioned this several times. He was always one of my favorite guests. His name was Senator John DeKemp out of Nebraska. And he wrote a whole big documentation. Well, it actually turned out to be a novel. It's called The Franklin Cover-Up. And people I used to really look up to, James, and I know you looked up to him too, like Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, he was busted red-handed. And coming into Omaha, Nebraska, and laundering money, this drug money that the CIA and other agencies of the government were getting. And the reason they were getting that money, one of the reasons, because, well, they wanted to get rich, but they were laundering this drug money through one of the biggest banks in the country at the time. It was called the Franklin Federal Credit Union in Omaha, Nebraska. John DeKemp talked all about that. They were running human slaves, little boys, little girls, whatever you wanted. You wanted a little, you know, 6-year-old girl or 8-year-old boy, whatever you wanted. Hey, put your order in and you can sell it. Maureen Reagan, Reagan's daughter? She was mixed up on all that. Poppy Bush was there, you know, by the way, and they call him Poppy Bush because he's, waist deep in these drugs. You know, I mean, folks, there's nothing new under the sun. Like I said earlier, okay, folks, when we get back, I'm going to take about just a couple more minutes to tell you about Poppy Bush running the Zapata Oil Company before he was even the head of the CIA running the drugs and stuff. Well, now, we're going to a break, folks. We'll be right back.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Still a lot more to talk about tonight, if you can believe it. We only have 2 segments left. We're chasing conspiracies with Pappy right now. And I'll tell you one thing. The thing about the guns is absolutely, without a doubt, undeniably true about the government releasing just all of these heavy-duty guns down to the cartels so they could track them. I mean, that was their excuse. I mean, it was one of the most brain-dead things you could mention. To me, Poppy Bush, as Pappy calls him,
was an international criminal, whether or not he liked little kids or not. But, you know, there's a lot of people who subscribe to that. And I'll tell you, you know, we've had a lot of guests on who have researched into this. I don't know. I haven't really read enough to make a educated and informed decision one way or another. The Big E has, as Eddie will testify. But to me, you know, it's irrelevant. I mean, they're criminals anyway. But, you know, a couple of more crimes and pederasty. Of course, pedophilia won't be a crime too much longer, as we mentioned. You know, they've got these groups out here seeking to decriminalize it. So I guess that'll be good for a lot of these Washington insiders and Hollywood moguls. But John DeCamp, Jim Rothstein. Jack McLam. These are people who have come on our show in the past over the years to talk about some of these issues that even for us are a little out of bounds. And anyway, we were going to have another show like that. Eddie, though, God bless him. Yeah, everybody has their strength. Booking guests is not Eddie. No matter who he books, they canceled. The only one who didn't was Paul Bebeau. And that was one of the biggest unmitigated disasters in the history of this show. Not so much that it went bad. I mean, we had a great interview with him. He knew all about the show. He wanted to come on. And then after he came on, it made headline news across the country. It was one of the biggest news stories in politics in America for about a month. A reporter from France flew from Paris to Memphis just to interview us about that show. John McCain made it was a big issue in the John McCain re-election for Senate campaign because I think they were lovers or whatever. I don't know what was going on there. The phone records Eddie never could get. I tell you, Eddie's like that guy who had all the talent to make it to the big leagues, but he just couldn't break through. That's Eddie when it comes to booking guests. But Eddie was going to have Officer Jack McLam, who now, in addition to being one of the most highly decorated police officers in the history of American law enforcement, has a radio program now, but he has new religious beliefs and he can't come on our show on Saturday or something. But he was going to come on and talk about some of this stuff that Eddie's getting out there for you now. Couldn't come on. It would have added a little more legitimacy, right, Ed?
No one is more legitimate than Officer Jack McClam. You're absolutely right. You know, he was shot to pieces in several, breaking up several drug deals in Phoenix, Arizona. The most highly decorated police officer ever to come out of Phoenix, Arizona. Flew for the Black Ops during the Vietnam War. That's all I know because he's not allowed to tell. People in the future, I would like to go back and talk about Poppy Bush when he had the Zapata Oil Company. We'd like to talk about that when he was, everybody knows he was a front man for the CIA. Later on, he became the head of the CIA and was running drugs then. Went into the vice president with Ronald Reagan. Everybody knows that. Running drugs when he was with CIA, when he was vice president under Ronald Reagan. And people, I would like to relate this. I think the most crucial part of this story is the way that police are being recruited now. Just going back to these police we saw in Washington, D.C. tonight. They're a bunch of wannabe Rangers, a bunch of wannabe SEALs. You know, they come out to arrest a bunch of 20-something selling lemonade. For God's sakes, why do they have to arrest them? They're recruiting morons in the police station now, James, for the police. They don't want them with normal IQs, that's for sure, because if they have normal IQs, they will think and question orders. Well, people, we need to talk about that. Listen, I'm not kidding you, James. I had rather be stopped roadblocked by the Crips and the Bloods or MS-59 or whatever the hell they are. I'd rather do battle with them because at least you know you don't have to battle the United States Army, the National Guard, the CIA. You don't have to worry about the IRS coming and kicking your doors down. I can handle these punks and the Crips and the Bloods, but it's just the police, James. We have to worry about them. They're recruiting thugs, and they get off on stomping on citizens' rights, and they can't wait. They cannot wait to bust someone's head. It's going on every day, James.
Well, and that's going on in the military for sure. You know, they're expunging records of thugs in return for their service. And then, you know, all of these thugs who are admittedly been previous members of some of these gangs you mentioned, and they're going in the military and getting military training, and then they're going back on the streets.
And James, this boggles my mind. James, you're a smart guy. What happened in Rome? In the Roman Empire, you were talking about how fat and lazy and stupid the American people are getting. That's what happened in the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire had one of the greatest armies the world had ever seen. Well, they got fat and lazy and stupid. What they do? They started recruiting soldiers from other parts of the empire who didn't give a damn about Rome. Well, guess what we're doing now? As Salma said, there's nothing new under the sun. James, they're recruiting. They're going in and getting Mexicans by the droves. You know, the other people out of third world countries. And they're telling them if they will do a stint in the United States military, guess what they're going to do? They're going to make citizens out of them. And you think some MS-29 gangbanger, when he gets out of the Army and he comes and applies for his automatic job in the police force, do you think he's going to give a hoot in hell about Eddie Miller or James Edwards or Keith Alexander's rights? You think they can't wait to blow our brains all over the street. I mean, we're talking about third world thugs. That's who the United States is bringing into the United States military because smart white kids do not want to be a thug, and they don't want to come in and shoot grandma. So they're doing what the Russians did in 1917. They're taking northern Russians and sending them to the south to shoot the southern Russians, and they're taking Russians from the south, shooting them, taking them up to the north to mow people down. They're doing what the Romans did under Nero. They're bringing in the so-called barbarians, and they didn't give a damn how many Romans they speared and tortured. They're looking forward to it. I'm telling you, that's the kind of police that we got looking forward to today. Turn it back over to you, son.
And I think it's more prevalent in the military than this. You know, certainly in local police offices like Bartlett. I mean, you got a pretty good corps here. I mean, it's the typical local residents of the community, but and there are some good ones, but more and more I think it's going on a national level. Anyway, Pappy does love to get fired up, that's for sure. But you know, one of the things I'll go to something a little lighter and fair now. One of the things we've been doing this week, we've been having an online presidential straw poll just to see, you know, who the people of the political cesspool you know, would vote for if the election was today. And it's a landslide. I mean, it's almost as if there's no other choice at all. Ron Paul all the way. And there's a whole lot of comments on this. If you go to our blog entry, is Ron Paul the one, quote unquote, everybody loves Ron Paul. Now, they don't love him necessarily, but they're going to vote for him if they vote at all, almost without exception. Not with us on race. He's not. You know, he worships at the King statue like all the other politicians, but he's easy on the homosexuals. But he does seem to be a constitutionalist. He definitely wouldn't vote for more taxes, which God knows we can't afford to pay. There's certainly enough going in Ron Paul's favor, as I wrote on the blog entry, that I can plan to vote for him in the GOP primaries in 2012, as I did in 2008, without feeling like a total whore and sellout after doing so. You voted for Ron Paul in 2008, right, Pappy?
Surely did, and I think you and me and Keith and other and Bill and Winston, I think we put the kiss of death on Chuck Baldwin when we voted for him for president back in when he ran for the constitutional ticket. Is that right, James?
Yeah. Well, as I said, I have voted in every election since I was allowed to vote, and my first election was 1998. I was 18 years old. 18 years old, 1998. That was the first time I was ever able to vote, and I voted. And I voted in every election since then. I wasn't old enough to vote for George Wallace. Eddie was saying he voted for George Wallace, but the same thing, the same pattern is consistent. I've never voted for anyone who's won, and that goes from the president all the way down to dog catcher. You know, I ran myself as a candidate for state representative, and I voted for myself, and I lost, just like all the rest of them that I voted. Eddie voted for me. Thank you, Ed. I did pretty good for an independent. I surely did. I think I set a record for getting the largest percentage of an independent candidate in a state representative race in Tennessee. Yeah, well, we spent a little more than 150, but we got outspent 10-1, and we spent about $10,000. $100,000 my opponent spent for a seat that paid 16. Anyway, I've never voted for anyone that's won, but I'm still going to vote for Ron Paul, I think, in 2012 in the GOP primaries. What else are you going to do? You want to vote in that straw poll? Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and do it. A lot of people are doing it. You don't have to vote for Ron Paul, but just tell us who you're going to vote for. It's the TPC online straw poll, thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're going to take a break. America says goodbye to a hero. We're going to tell you about him when we return
and conclude in the political cesspool right after this.
We'll be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Final segment. Here we are. The final segment of the night, if you can believe it. Another 3 hours gone by far too quickly. But I'm happy to be joined now by my good friend and yours, Eddie. Peter Scoop Stanton, political cesspool correspondent, calling in. Where are you calling in from tonight, Scoop? And did you wave to Hurricane Irene as she passed you by?
Well, Hurricane Irene is making her approach here in the Washington, D.C. area. She should be in full force about 2 a.m. Over my house.
Hopefully. Okay, so she hasn't exactly gotten to your house yet.
No. It's raining. The wind's picking up. So we're hunkered down for the evening.
And so you didn't evacuate. Did they try to get you to pull up stakes or what?
No, I'm waiting for a FEMA trailer to be dropped in front of my house in case you get pulled out.
Well, did they try to get you to leave, Scoop? Or
No. We're not near any large body of water except the Chesapeake Bay, and my house is pretty far away from the Chesapeake Bay or the Potomac River or any other major body of water.
Okay, so you didn't live in Kill Devil Hills, North Carolina, or whatever I kept seeing on TV today.
No.
Of course, I knew you didn't live there, but you're not in an area like that right now. You weren't vacationing in Kill Devil Hills.
No.
Well, either way, so it is. Now, can you go outside and, fly a major kite right now? I remember I was in Portland, Oregon one day, and they had this historic windstorm. And my dad, this is when I was a kid, and we were up there to see a basketball game, actually. And my dad said he was going to go out there and ride the storm. Are you going to go out there and try to tackle Irene, or are you going to enjoy it at all, or get any footage? I kept watching Shepard Smith today, and he kept saying, send in your hurricane footage to Fox News. Why don't you, be our man on the street reporting for the cesspool with this?
Well, I'll send another different type of photo. Mr. Smith will get a rise out of it, if you know what I mean.
So you're not going to go out there and try to windsurf this thing?
No. I'm not one of these idiots who jump in the body of water, think they can body surf, and next thing you know, the Coast Guard's out there risking the life and limb for some loser.
Yeah, actually a couple of fatalities today. Well, unfortunately, speaking of fatalities, I know that's why you're calling in. It was actually Peter Scoop Stanton himself that scooped this story to me earlier in the week. And, of course, we quickly got it up on the Political Cesspool's website. Pete, I'll let you tell the story from beginning to end. America lost a living legend, one of the good guys, truly one of the good guys this week. And it's a man whose establishment you visited and ate at.
Right. Well, this nation not only lost a patriot, but a true American, and a Philadelphia native son named Joey Vento. In 1966, armed with a ninth grade education, some cases of food, $6, and liver training and experience in the U.S. Army, he opened a cheesesteak stand across the street from the self-proclaimed king of steaks. And the end result was his hard work and his innovation in, making a sandwich. He became a very, very wealthy man. And 40 years later, in 2006, he became a center of controversy when he put a bumper sticker or a little sign that says, "This is America. When ordering, speak English." Now, people got all upset because he had the sign up and he would not take it down. He would not kowtow to the mainstream media and the leftist psychopaths. And needless to say, the end result was still continued success. Besides having people speak English when ordering, Mr. Vento spent a lot of money and time and effort in the shop to remember those fallen public safety heroes in the Philadelphia Police and Fire Department that lost their lives in the line of duty, including Daniel Faulkner. He has a shrine, if you will, of a photo of Mr. Faulkner, and in big letters says, Officer Daniel Faulkner, murdered by Mumia Abu-Jamal. Now, leftist idiots like Ed Asner will say, free Mumia Abu-Jamal, but this person who was born Wesley Cook shot and killed Officer Faulkner in cold blood. On top of that, he has patches from about every law enforcement agency up and down the East Coast. He was also a very charitable man. He gave $100,000 to Elton John's AIDS Foundation, and he held fundraisers where if you bought one of his patronizers' restaurant, he would donate all proceeds to a foundation for either fallen officers or firefighters. Whereas Sean Hannity, his Freedom Concerts, you know, the band's got to get paid, and the park's got to get paid, and, you know, everybody's got to get paid. But, you know, with Vento, 100% of the proceeds was going to go to charity. And he passed away on the 23rd of August at 71 years old. And what's really disgusting is the Washington Post put out an obituary about Mr. Vento. Now, Will Chamberlain said, you're at your best when you're laid to rest. Because when, you know, when somebody passes away, all you hear about is all the great stories how this person was. However, this reporter, her name is Emily Langer, she actually trashed Joey Vento. I'm holding the obituary in my hand right now from the August 25th edition of the Washington Post. I'll go through it real quick. The first sentence, Joey Vento, the tattooed, trash-talking, motorcycle-revving founder of Juno Steaks, the legendary cheesesteak joint in South Philadelphia, died August 23rd at home. That's the first sentence. He's tattooed, trash-talking, and I guess he must own a motorcycle or something. Going further down the article, he called, she said that South Philadelphia, the old Italian neighborhood, built on Audrey Clara gang, yet all-American traditional of street food. Then another paragraph, in 2006, aggrieved by the influx of immigrants in the neighborhood, he hung a sign in the shop that said, "This is America when ordering speak English." That move brought national media attention to Geno's. Mr. Vento appeared on television supporting his heavy bling and defended his right to free speech. So I guess if you buy your own jewelry and wear it, you're wearing bling, but I doubt Mrs. Langer would ever say anything about any rap star wearing some jewelry. Then the article goes on and says, the store would not refuse to serve a non-English speaker, he said, but certain standards would be enforced. God forbid a property owner enforcing some standards. You don't hear that in the public school about standards. You don't hear it about the government efficiency standards, but, you know, a private citizen owning a private restaurant needs standards. Again, folks, this is an obituary, not just a hate piece. Next paragraph. Critics said Mr. Vento had crossed the line from serving up the swagger many customers enjoyed to inflaming real sensitivities in the community. Mexican restaurant workers and other immigrants had flooded to Philadelphia, Nicholas said, especially from New York, where business suffered 9/11. It was also pointed out that Mr. Vento, the grandson of Italian immigrants, perhaps should have been more accepting of the neighborhood's natural evolution. Then Vento, to his credit, says people are being too touchy. So a guy who was born and raised in South Philadelphia, has a business in South Philadelphia, seeing the quality of life going from what he's used to, probably very decent, with very decent, hardworking people from South Philadelphia, to something other than that. I mean, again, diversity is not a strength, folks. It's a deadly disease.
Hey, Pete, I want to thank you for that excellent report on the passing of Joey Vento. If I could just add a couple of things. First, I want to reiterate a couple of the points that you made. The man, ninth grade education, $6 in his pocket, and he creates a landmark tourist trap, what became a tourist trap restaurant, Geno's Steaks in Philadelphia. Of course, Joey Vento was the founder of the restaurant, became world famous, as Peter reported, Scoop reported.
in 2006 when he placed a sign on his business that read, "This is America when ordering speak English." That's all it said. Now, only in a very sick and degenerative, multicultural, diverse society like America would that be a controversy to put a sign on your window that said, "When ordering speak English." But, I mean, let's face it. If you don't know what they're saying, you don't know what to serve them. So it kind of helps him out if he could understand them. So he shouldn't have to be forced to learn Mexican so he can decipher his orders. This single act, though, putting that sign up, pushed him into the front of America's immigration debate, and he was a fixture on television and radio shows across the country there in 2006. He was a guest on our radio program the very day he appeared on the Bill O'Reilly Show. We had him on our show. That was during the height of his fame. Austin Farley, if any of you TPC fans that go back to the very early days of this broadcast, Scoop, I know you'll remember, Austin Farley, my co-founder of this radio show, who is no longer with us, booked Joey for the show that night. He died last week, or this week, I should say, of a massive heart attack. But America needs more men like Joey Vento, men who build businesses and refuse to cower. He never apologized for putting up the "This is America when ordering speak English" sign. Rest in peace, Joey Vento. You'll be missed. Scoop, as Scoop has said, as the left always does, they are excoriating him in the press. But we do have a good obituary from the Philadelphia Daily News at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Scoop, stay safe. We're out of time. Don't ride out Irene too hard. We'll see you next week, buddy. Thanks for the report.
No problem.
For Eddie Miller, I'm James Edwards. Good night and God bless. See you next week in the Political Cesspool. We love you, everybody.